Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Malo and Lee, my name is Jenny Sarles, a Member of Parliament for Manukau East for the Labour Party, and welcome to this edition of Red Alert. Our topic today is supporting our young people, how to stop our young people from falling through the gaps in education and between education, training and work. And my guest this morning is Mr. John Kotoisuva, who is the founder of Oceania Career Academy, and before that, John Kotoisuva founded CME Mentoring. John has an engineering trade background and a long, extensive career in education and tertiary teaching. John founded CME Mentoring Foundation, as I mentioned earlier, a trust that began the innovative Trades at School program in 17 high schools around Auckland. He's now the management team in the management team of Oceania Career Academy, and he's an industry advisor, a Pacific advisor to Manukau Institute of Technology, and a training advisor to Steel Construction New Zealand. He's also a youth guarantee advisor to the Ministry of Education. John Kotoisuva is of Fijian descent. He's the vice chairperson of the Pacific Health Initiative at the Whanau, and he's also the president of the Auckland Fijian Executive Committee Board and chair of the Auckland Mayoral Fund for the Pacific, something that an organisation that he and I both sit on. John also coordinates the Auckland-based Relief to the Pacific in the face of natural disasters such as tropical Cyclone Evan, and just today we have the anniversary of Cyclone Winston in Fiji. John, Bulavinaka, and welcome to this edition of Red Alert.
Bulavinaka, Jenny.
So, John, we know from the figures recently released, according to the latest household labour figures, there are more young people who are not in education, employment or training nowadays. Under this current government, 8.5 years on, 15 to 24-year-olds who are not in education, employment or training, or NEET as we call them, have spiralled into more than 90,000 young people. That is a 50% increase since this government came into power. Can you just talk more about what it is that you do in your organisation and how you work with these young people who are not in education, employment or training?
Before I answer that, Jenny, just a correction. I'm not the current president of the Fiji community in Auckland. I was the president for 3 years. Coming back to this the setting up of the CME Mentoring Foundation Trust, in about 2008, 2009, at that period, was a direct response to a need in our community. Being an industry assessor with the ITO competence, at that time, I saw that there were low participation of Pacific and Maori in the areas of trades. But another thing that I also saw was the high termination rate of those who actually engaged. And but also there was I saw that there was a good opportunity for the Pacific community economically, as far as contribution into so putting all those needs together, I had to respond, and the CME Mentoring Foundation Trust was a result that we started at that time with 12 students from four secondary schools, and we grew to over we have dealt with hundreds of students at this stage.
So can you just tell me a bit more of your approach? What is it that you do that is different from other initiatives?
We concentrate on the individual. Our philosophy has been a philosophy that is, I would say, like biblically inclined, that I believe and I practice what I actually preach, that everything we need to succeed in life is already built into us. And the community, the education sector, and everybody who's around who's around the young person or our children or grandchildren – Our job is to make that become a reality for them. But they've got to start to believe that they carry the X factor. It's just not only the ones on TV that got the X factor. It's our kids as well. But they have to start believing in that. Quite often, I think that the whole system is driven towards qualification and qualification and qualification and credits and unit standards. That's important. But I think what's also important is that our kids have to start believing that they carry that everything that they need to succeed is already built into them, and we've got to get them to start believing in that. And that's the underlying factor or what drives the concept of our approach towards engaging young people into the trades.
So what are the key practical approaches you've put into place to bring about your philosophies and to practice? Tell us a bit more about how you work on a practical level with young people.
We started with a basic mentoring concept. And the concept has nothing to do with skills, but everything to do with what makes a good tradesperson. It has everything to do with attitude, shaping good attitudes. Because this is something that industry has been calling for many, many years, is they want somebody who could turn up every day, turn up on time, and turn up with the right attitude of wanting to learn. And as a result, industry is not getting this. And I saw this is the result of a high termination rate, that the level of which industry is requiring and the level of what the education sector is delivering, there's a huge mismatch. And these very, very same companies are going off to China, India, Vietnam, and the Philippines to go and get in semi-skilled and skilled workers. And our kids are in direct competition with this outside workforce. I believe that we could do a better job in raising our young people and to take these jobs. But we have to, as a community, and as in the education sector, we have to work together very strongly to be able to do that. And this is exactly what this mentoring concept was about. But now we have evolved to become a provider ourselves.
So what are the ages of these young people, John, that you work with? And how do you recruit these young people? Who do you work with?
We work very closely with the secondary schools because we believe that's the area where the risk is when they are transitioning from the compulsory education sector into the user pay world, getting into the tertiary sector, student loan, all these other things are starting. Everything costs money at that level. So we work very closely with the secondary school so that every with the transition is seamless, the transition is smooth. When they engage with industry or when they engage with the polytech, they engage with purpose. And the purpose is personalized. The purpose is something that they could visualize of where they want to be in the future. And the purpose is emotionalized. Hello, high water, I'm going to get out there and do it. That's the kind of attitude that we're looking for. Mentoring is about bringing all those three together.
So what has been the impact for Māori and Pacific young people that you've seen through CME Mentoring and your work in trades and school and, you know, later on now in your new organization, Oceania Careers Academy?
The impact has been very, very, it's a personal impact. A lot of our young people are in secondary school and they don't know why they're there. They cannot personalize their NCEA. And this is where the issue is. If you ask them about school, they will tell you that it's boring. That's a very, very common remark that we get. And the teachers know. But also the main education sector, they struggle to try and respond to this need. The impact that we have for these young people is we bring purpose into their life. We bring direction into their life. We bring self-worth because they know if they continue going down this track with self-belief and then unleashing the potential that they have, they will bring value to the communities that they live in. And once it's a sense of purpose and a sense of being useful. And this is something that they can personalize. But not only that, it will make a difference in their life standard. I believe this is the best way to combat poverty, the best way to combat poverty is to create a mentality of contributing to society. And these young people, we must cultivate this thinking to contribute. And we use the trades as a vehicle. It's a fantastic vehicle. I was never without a job. My sons are fully qualified tradesmen. I don't think that they will ever be without a job. And I don't know of any tradesman who's ever without a job today. But at the same time, we can make good money. My younger son, he's a contractor. He would be clocking now almost $150,000 a year. That's what he'd be making now. My elder son is close to $100,000 a year. I mean, no student loan. This is the kind of thing that's required, the use of trades. No student loan. But a good tradesman comes with good personal values, and this is something that's very important in our mentoring philosophy. Good personal values and principles and self-belief and self-worth. These are the things that employers are looking for today. And this is the best way to combat competing with the workforce outside this country.
So, John, we know that one of the reports that the main industries got together and wrote, Hawkins, Fletcher, Auckland Council, to name a few years ago now, where they made the prediction that here in the city of Auckland, in order to rebuild our city, in the area of construction and infrastructure alone, by next year, by 2018, that we will be short by 32,000 skilled people. Now, we know that the NEET figures are at least 90,000. Many of those are young people, age 15 to 24 years of age. So what do you do? How do you sell the message, especially to Māori and Pacific parents? As you know, many of them don't look at trades like they do the professions, whether, you know, you were talking about medicine or law or those sorts of professions. How do you sell the message that getting into the trades is a good career to the parents?
I use the school sector, the secondary school sector. They organize parents' evening, and I speak directly to the parents. You know, when I start talking to the parents about money, when the potential of income, and the abundance of employment, and comparing it, because I know that our welfare system is telling us that we have quite a highly qualified unemployment population, and people with degrees are struggling to get jobs. We have to face that fact. And the trades, they're making good money out in the trades. So when the parent starts to hear this, immediately they could see that here we have a possibility of changing the economic situation in their own homes. And I have had parents who have come back and told me that their son now is the main breadwinner of in the house. This has happened. I've had a father who actually told me that the first pay packet that his son got, his son earned more than him in the first pay packet. And he said to me, Samoan guy, and he said to me that his purpose for coming to New Zealand has been fulfilled. And that to me was more than what I could hope for, that our reason to exist as an organization is fulfilling its vision. So it's a powerful thing. And the key thing is we've got to have sustainable and highly skilled and high paid jobs. If we want to short circuit poverty, that is the way. We've got to empower the next generation. We've got to provide an environment where they could unleash the gifts and the potential that they have. We use the trades as a vehicle to strengthen, grow, develop the gifts that they have, turn it into skills and serve their community. And our education sector needs to look at that in that way, so that they don't see them as a group, they see them as individual. The problem we have is they come in cohorts. Our kids are not cohorts. Our kids are individual. And the underlying philosophy of our organization is looking at them as individuals and treating them as such, because they're very special.
As your organization, you've done such a great job over the last few years. I wonder if you could just go back to to, because you've actually been in existence for over 10 years now. How you've been funded has been mainly through private contribution, as far as I know, ASB Bank as well, which is now called Foundation North. Can you just talk a little bit more about the evidence that has been collected over the years, the numbers of students that come through your organization, and the numbers of them who end up with jobs?
Yeah. We've been striking 90-plus outcomes, and that's in the areas of employment, that's in the areas of further education, because some of them discover that, hey, I want to go to university now, or I want to go in and do a level 5 program at the Polytech, or a level 4 program at the Polytech, and they're there because they could now personalize education. Before, they couldn't. The whole hammering was on get NCEA, get NCEA, get NCEA, and they can't personalize that. But once they can, they turn back to education and they use the system to their advantage. And we've been striking 90% plus. In the last, just to give you an example, in the last 6 months, and this is from at the end, towards the end of last year, we've placed over 50 into jobs, you know? And these 50 into jobs are direct from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Direct from high school into apprenticeships, you know, because when I did my apprenticeship, direct from high school into apprenticeship. My sons did their apprenticeship direct from high school into apprenticeship. It's the preparation from high school that could get them to make this transition straight into apprenticeships. Because if they're 18 years old and they're exiting secondary school from 18 years old, an 18-year-old can make a decision to go and fight in Afghanistan, join the army, and go and fight in Afghanistan. That's a life and death situation. Surely our kids should be good enough to come out of secondary school and go straight into the employment sector. And the industry is the best classroom for our young people. As a tradesman myself, 90% of what I learned is from industry, not in the politics but from industry. That's where the real learning happens. And the quicker, with good preparation, transition our young people into industry, that's where the learning happens. And it saves a lot of money from the government and from making student loan and all that stuff. It saves a lot of money. And we need to start paying attention. Government policies need to start looking at that. How can we make it more concrete for these guys to? And we have a couple of models. Right now we're working on a model with a secondary school. It's a 3x2 model. It's commonly used now, where the students spend three days with the secondary school and 2 days with the provider. Some of them go to the Polytech, some of them come to us. And but we deal with those who are just about to exit secondary school last year. But the thing is this, with this model, I believe sometimes the damage to young people has been done, so much damage has been done, that it might take us a little bit longer to fix it than having a 3x2. And but that's working now. It's working very well with a lot of young people. But the other model that we're also looking at is a 4x4 model, where they come to us and we take them on full time, but they spend 4 weeks with us and 4 weeks in industry. 4 weeks with us and 4 weeks in industry. That means when they finally finish, they've got a full time apprenticeship. They have completed their year one apprenticeship, because it's a three year program, the apprenticeship. And but not only that, they have built up a very, very solid relationship with the employers, and we have taught them well in the areas of attitude and all that. Everything is live, you know, and industry is the best classroom for these young people, and most cost-effective when it comes to education.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the equipment, the technology, they've got all the latest stuff, you know, better than any provider. And so it's just 1 and 1 equals 2 right there. It just makes sense to go and get industry. And industry wants to teach them, you know. And these young people, they will see it exciting. And education will never be boring again for them once we engage industry.
I wonder if you'll just elaborate and talk a bit more. I know that a lot of the young people you work with, age 16 and 17 in high schools.
And 18.
And 18 are some of the most challenging young people. They're the ones who are at risk of becoming not in education, employment and training, and dropping out. So how do you get a young person? Give us an example. You don't have to use their actual actual name of a young person like that that has just, you know, been considering dropping out of high school altogether. But what do you do to make them job ready? How do you work with such a challenging young person to then have them end up in a job?
First, I've got to carry the right attitude myself. If I look at it as a challenging factor, it will be challenging. But for me, I look at their X factor, because never mind what negative that they show me, I know behind that negative is a superstar. And that's what I look for. That's what makes this type of work exciting. It's the attitude of the providers. We, the providers, are very, very important on how we look at our young people. That's the first thing. We got to change ourselves if we want our young people to change. Right. And just to give you an example, I had to write a letter to a judge to give this boy one more chance. He's a Samoan boy. I won't mention his name, but I can go this far I won't even mention the school at this stage. But I had to write a letter to prevent him from going to jail. The charge was pretty serious. So the judge says, okay, I'll give you one more shot. I got this boy into an apprenticeship. He works for a steel construction company, and his mother is a solo mom, met the principal at a shopping center at Pack and Save, and the mother was telling the principal that her son is now the man of the house. And he's now taking responsibility for the education of his young sisters. So the mother was just so, the principal was just so blown away. She contacted me and told me this. And I was, you know, and this is just one example. I have another example of a boy that I went for a family conference. Again, the police got me involved. When you're talking about hard cases, not all are hard cases. You've got a lot of good boys out there. Mm-hmm. But there are some there. They've gone over the edge. And today that boy is serving his apprenticeship, and he was a guest speaker in our graduation that you attended, you know. He was our guest speaker there. But there are many, many other success stories. And you know what we do, Jenny? What we're doing now is we do what we call, we recycle our success. We get all the guys, instead of getting VIPs and all to come and do speeches, we get our students who have the alumni group, and we recycle our success and get them to come in and talk and motivate the others, and especially those who have been through a lot of hard times. Mm-hmm. But challenging, I enjoy the challenge if it's that. But I think that getting involved with the parents is one of the key things. Get involved in the parents, and especially there's a lot of mothers. And you know, Pacific Island mothers, you want to solve the problem, ring mom, you know, and she'll get the thing done. If the boys play up, ring mom. So we've got to bring all that into the factor, you know. And another thing too is us as providers, we've got to know where these kids come from. You know, where these kids come from. And when you meet their parents, you know all that. And I'm surprised, not surprisingly nowadays, but a lot of them, they don't have male role models in the house. They, you know, solo mom attitude. And they get angry and all this kind of thing. And we have to look beyond that anger. So it's our own philosophy as an organization that is very, very Pacific, that is very, very village kind of mentality. Because when I talk about these kids here, I always say, these are my kids, because that's the village language. Mm-hmm. You know, and because I know in the village, when we raise our kids up, auntie and all that, it's just like their mom, their dad, you know. Mm-hmm. And all that, the same kind of philosophy. If we bring that thing and we own the situation with our young people, I think it will change their response to us. But if we go hardline and just keep pushing down and credits and unit standards down their throat, you won't make it. They can't personalize nothing. So by combining this and having belief in them, we've got to have belief in ourselves first. And
you know, it's so true, the saying that it takes a village to raise a child. One of the highlights of my year is when I do come and attend your graduation, John, because I see not just the parents, but I hear just how inspired your students are. Mm. I hear their speeches, and I really love how you just get them to be the main speakers at the graduation ceremony. Mm. And, you know, you change people's lives. Okay. A lot of these young people, before they come to you, they don't actually have a lot of self-belief. Mm. But you do train them. A lot of them, as you say, don't grow up in homes where they have a role model who works full-time, where they don't even have a father figure who works. So how do you actually instill that work ethic in a young person, something that they don't previously have?
We one thing that I have learned over the years, first thing is to speak positive things into their lives. You know, when I was 18 years old, my father said to me that I'd make a good school teacher. You know, and I've hated school, to be quite honest. I'm just like this young fellas, but there's a school that I'm heavily involved in, and I'm involved a lot in education now. I believe in education, but I believe in the right kind of education and the relevant type of education. But coming back to your question about how do I turn these young people around? How do I get them motivated? If I don't believe in myself, if I don't believe that I too carry the X factor, then my young people will not have a chance to believe that I have to be a walk the talk mentor. If I'm going to be sending them out into the trades, I've got to be a walk the talk tradesman. And I know that it is not difficult to teach anybody how to put a house up. But the difficult part is to have somebody with integrity, have somebody with character, have somebody who knows what honesty is about, have somebody who knows that whatever come out of my mouth is me. I have to be the one. When I say I'm going to turn up to work tomorrow, I'll turn up to work tomorrow. Even if it's on a Saturday, I will not go out and party out all night and then don't turn up to work tomorrow. It's got to be someone with integrity. That's what separates a good tradesman from a unreliable tradesman. And that's what we got to build character. Our boys have to become good men. Men with good values. And this is what's important. And you know what? They are so attracted to this message. They love this message because it's an empowering message to them. It's the truth. It's real to them in their lives. It's real. I'm not a bad person after all, you know, apart from all the things they may have thought that they've done and blah, blah, blah. But they've got to start to say to themselves, I'm not a bad person after all. Now, that's the beginning of making a good tradesman.
John, we're just coming up to the end of our program, but I just want to thank you for joining me today. And I also just want to commend you and your young people. I know that one of the things that they do in New Zealand is they actually build things. They've actually assisted with building some buildings that have gone to a school here. I know that you've also taken quite a number of them to Fiji to help rebuilding. You know, one of the things I heard just on Morning Report today, because it's a year anniversary, is that there are still numbers of families, hundreds of families in Fiji who are still living in tents. And so that kind of contribution, not just the fact that you help to change young people's lives around, they are contributing back to their families and they're contributing back to Aotearoa New Zealand society overall. But in addition to that, they also going back to their islands that they weren't born in, to help build houses for other families to live in. You know, that is just fantastic contribution, John. And can I commend you and your work and wish you all the best in the future? There is so much that we can learn from what it is that you do. There is so much that we as policymakers need to actually take into account when we actually are trying to write policies that actually work for our young people, that work for our families. And so I want to just congratulate you and to just say all the very best as you continue this very important work into the future.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you so much.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.